We're dealing with men this time, so we can explain men in about 15 minutes. It's really not quite that easy, but you are going to find it's different. As we talked about the complication and method with which women process and do different things, it is different with men. Considerably different, even in the things that God says to the wives about the men, but then also in the way that men process and deal with things, the things that they are looking for. It's interesting, you know, we change the title for the women is "What Does She Want From Me Anyway?" And the frustration that a man might feel from trying to figure out what is it? I don't know what she wants. And for women, it's different. It is, what does he need now? Because we describe men typically as much more needy than women. Most wives will tell you that. Tell me somewhere that you might notice that. When they're sick. That's almost the first place we hear. Men are not the greatest of patients. You know, it's easy. We expect our wives, and when you got the kids, the wife may be sick, but if, you know, we hope that she can lay down and get some rest as soon as she gets the kids fed and put off to school and gets the chores taken care of. But, you know, we kind of mope, you know, and we kind of lay around, men do, and we want that special attention when we're sick. So wives will describe husbands many times as being more needy. And so we talk about, so what is it? What does he need now? What is it that she's looking to fulfill? What we're going to find out is that where women were driven to security, men are driven to simplicity. That's that whole idea of boxes. He doesn't want to be in multiple boxes at one time. If you're talking about the finances with a man, he wants to talk about the finances. It may be that the finances are tied to three other boxes in your mind, but he doesn't want to talk about all three of those. Men will avoid conversation many times because of two different things. One, he doesn't know what? He doesn't know what to say, and men understand that. Women can beat us to death with their conversational skills. There's no question about that. But there's a couple things. He doesn't want to start a conversation because he's afraid of a couple things. One, he doesn't... Okay, he doesn't know when it's going to end. We sometimes tell men, we say, you know what, guys? Pack your suitcase, hop on the train, maybe a journey. But if he starts the conversation, he wants it to be in that one box and he wants to stay there. So sometimes he won't start a conversation because he doesn't know where it's going to go. He doesn't want to get into all these other things at one time. His mind isn't processing that way. And so he doesn't know when it's going to end. Secondly, he doesn't know where it's going to go. He's scared of both of those things. And so we always tell women, if you understand that men are driven towards simplicity, then sometimes keep conversations only dealing with one thing. Though you want to tie it to a lot of others, though you want to connect him, but especially if he brings it up, then stay within the box where he is. Help him to stay within that box. He will appreciate that better because he functions better with simplicity. That's why most men approach social planning and social calendars different than women do as well. God's going to provide the instructions for the wife back in Ephesians chapter 5 as well. He's going to give these different instructions than he gave to the men about the wives, and there's a reason for that. One, he's going to say, wives, submit to your husbands. That's one of the things he tells. He gives her two commands. Gives him one, love in all these different areas, in all these different ways, but love your wives. But says to her in verse 22, submit to your husbands. And then secondly, says down in verse 33, respect your husbands. Now, that idea of submission comes from a word that means literally to line up under. It's a yielding to somebody else. It has nothing to do with equality. We understand that. Headship and submission has nothing to do with equality. We know that because you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and it says that man is the head of woman, but it also says that what? Anybody remember from 1 Corinthians 11? That Christ is the head of man, and we certainly understand that. That is a superiority-inferiority thing, at least in our mind. I'm saying we could understand that from a purely inferiority-superiority standpoint, right? But then it also says what? God is the head of Christ. That's a positional issue. That's not an equality issue, is it? Because John tells us in 1 John chapter 1 that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. deity, equal deity. Jesus is just as much Godhead as God the Father is Godhead as the Spirit. They are all deity. One is not a superior being or deity to the others, though they have different roles. We understand that. It's the same way in a marriage relationship. When before God, we're equal. That's some of what they struggled with in the New Testament. When Paul is giving instructions to the Corinthians and about misuses of things they were doing, and he's talking about women's role in the assembly and things of that nature, some of that comes because you had gone from a societal way of thinking to a Christ who is saying, as Paul told the Galatians, there is neither male nor female before God. See, we all have equal access to the throne of God. There's no difference there. Women have the same standing with God spiritually as men have with God spiritually. There is no difference. There's absolute equality as far as our sonship or daughtership to the Heavenly Father. That doesn't mean we're in the same role. It's no different than in the armed forces. How many in here were in the armed forces? And so, who was the general? Were you a general? Okay. So, were you enlisted or officer? Enlisted? Enlisted. So you understand that there were numerous ranks then above you. That was the nature of it. That didn't mean that the person who was the officer was better than you. That's not what you're taught. But you're taught he has a different role than you, and you are to submit, yield to that person because of the role relationship. That's what he's dealing with in marriage as well. God says it only functions when you think about the body. We talked about last night the idea of members of a body. A body only works properly because the body yields to the head, correct? We've got a gentleman we talked about on the way over here in our congregation that has Huntington's disease. I would tell you that's a picture of a body not yielding to a brain functioning properly. Whereas my arm moves when my brain tells my arm to move, and there's a voluntary motion in that, and you do whatever you're going to do. He, because of the disease, has involuntary motions. That's just a part of that disease. And so if you watch him try to stand or walk, you'd say, that's a body not functioning properly. The head and the body aren't functioning together. God says, for marriage to work, you have to have headship and you have to have a submission role, and they have to function together. It's not an equality issue. It's an issue of whether or not I want to fulfill that role. But I want us to focus a little bit more on the idea of respect as well this morning. When I first started teaching the marriage classes, I was absolutely confident that the overwhelming majority of marital issues rested with the husbands. Now, I don't know if that's because I had read more of that, or if it's because of the home environment that I came out of, where it was clearly my father that was completely dysfunctional to all things that he should have been. My mother would have done anything for us or anybody else. And so maybe there was a baggage that I carried with me that made me feel like, you know what, if he had just done right. And so there's a tendency to think in terms of it's the husband that's at fault. After doing this for about 10 or 12 years, or the last 10 or 12 years of doing it, I'm convinced that it is absolutely equal across the board. There are as many women not fulfilling their roles as to what God asked them to do as there are men not fulfilling theirs. And it's because of the very thing that we talked about in the last session. We don't know what the other person needs. And so women want to love their husbands, which I'm not saying that's wrong. As a matter of fact, Paul told Titus, have the older women teach the younger women to love their husbands. But the primary need that the man has is not that security that comes from the love that's described in Ephesians 5. So women are trying to provide for the husband what it is they need themselves. But God says that's not the way that it works. Here's what I want the women to do. He says, nevertheless, let her respect her husband. If I were to ask you, give me one word to describe the love of Christ for us, what word would you use? And there's different words, but give me some of the words you'd use. One word to describe the love of Christ for us.
Sacrificial,
great word. Selfless. That's the one I was looking for. That's kind of an all-encompassing, isn't it? There's unconditional. Would you agree? Christ loves us regardless. The whole point of Romans is while we were yet sinners. That's when all of this happened for us. Absolutely unconditional love. He loves because we need His love, not because we deserve His love. But when we think in terms of respect, the most common phrase that we'll hear is, respect must be what? Earned. I would tell you, not true. Not true. I'm not saying respect isn't earned sometimes, but respect in the husband-wife relationship, God does not say, wives, if your husband really loves you the way that he should, you should respect him. He doesn't say that, does he? He says, wives, respect your husbands. No if then. This is your role as a wife, to respect your husband, to demonstrate that toward your husband. And we want to talk a little bit about that this morning, because we don't think in those terms. I wasn't in the military. My father was. He was an officer in the military. And so because of that, we used to go out onto MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa a lot. And when I got old enough to drive, then I would drive the car out there. And the car had a little sticker on the bumper. And it designated that we were allowed to come on base. That was back before they stopped everybody at the gate. If you had that sticker, they'd wave you in. And if you had that sticker and the sticker was an officer's sticker, not only did they wave you in, they snapped to attention and that guy would salute every time that car would go through the gate. It didn't matter that it was a 16-year-old kid driving the car. That made no difference at all. He knew that his responsibility was to snap to attention, because that was the car of an officer and you demonstrated the respect for the position of the officer. Now, as a 16-year-old kid, I assure you, he didn't think it was too amusing when I would snap a salute back to him, you know, and wave as I went through. I'm sure he wanted to do something other than salute, but he left the gun holstered and all of that. He did that. He demonstrated respect because that was the position, because that was the role. How many of you would say, you know what, I've lived through several presidents, some I've liked, some I didn't? Yeah, there's no question. There are some that I've liked less than others that I have disliked. You know, but I would tell you this. I would hope that regardless of my personal feelings, if any of the acting presidents of the United States had walked into a room where I was, that I would have demonstrated respect to the office of the President of the United States. Now, I might have hoped I could get him aside somewhere and talk to him about where I thought he was so askew. But the idea is, there is a respect for the office itself, for the position. God says, I've placed the man in this position. You are to respect that. I think that's what he's telling the wives. Respect that position. Demonstrate to him that kind of respect. And so we would normally not think of it at all, but I would tell you, I think God is saying unconditional love, unconditional respect. Are wives ever hard to love? I should ask the wives that, not the husband, because you know a husband's afraid to raise his hand. Sometimes harder to love than others. Are men sometimes hard to respect? Yeah. Husbands are hard to respect, but I don't think that changes the nature of what God says we're supposed to do toward them. Wives, respect your husbands. And we're going to find out that really is more simple than we think. Three different areas that we want to talk about. What does he need? One, he's going to be asking these three questions. One, is life with you going to be filled with confidence? Is it going to be something that is an expression of confidence? Do I know that my wife is confident in me? And so because of that, there are going to be certain things that come to mind. Two men meet for the first time. Almost invariably, what will the first or one of the first questions be? What do you do? Where do you work? Men do that, don't they? Women rarely ask that. I mean, they will ask that sometimes. When two women meet for the first time, what do you think the questions normally revolve around? Kids, or where'd you get that? See, I'm glad you said that, not me, but... Yeah, they may be admiring what somebody has, their dress or something else, but their conversations will normally gravitate toward relationships, children, other things of that nature. And so they focus concentrations on relationships because that's what, as we talked about last time, that's what they're tied to. They are relationship-based. Men are not. Men are not the same kind of relationship-based. You know, rarely do I ever just sit around with a bunch of my buddies and we just chat about all the wonderful things that are going on in our life. If it isn't talking about the game or about something, the computer, or about something, we're not going to typically have that conversation. But women may. They're relationship-oriented, men are not. Men are going to be centered around the idea of work. So you need to appreciate his desire to achieve, his desire to work. A man comes home, says to his wife, "Honey, I lost my job today." And she says, "It's okay. We have each other." Now, it sounds like a very loving thing to say, doesn't it? Most men don't react well to that statement. Why? Because to a man, it's not okay that he lost his job. His identity is tied to his job. Who he is tied to his ability to provide for the family, to take care of the family. And it's not that he's not thinking his wife is trying to be disrespectful of him, but she's trying to say a very loving thing to him. That's okay. We still have each other. But in his mind, he understands it's not okay if I don't have work, if I'm not providing, if I can't take care of my family. And so his identity is tied to that. That's one of the reasons it's difficult for men to retire. How many of you know somebody that has retired that has really wrestled with that? They almost lost a part of their identity because they stopped working. They had to seek for something else to do. You know, that happens. We lose that identity sometimes. You need to appreciate that, and we'll talk about how you do that. You need to appreciate his desire to provide, to protect the family. Appreciate his desire to lead the family. God's design is for this submission. Appreciate that. Help him to feel like he is a leader and that you are helping him to understand. Recognize the glory that it brings to God for a wife to properly place herself under the leadership of her husband. The things that she says that will indicate that. The ways that she can show the respect regarding that. We've got a friend, a couple of friends, a husband and wife that I was studying with because they were having some major wrestling going on in their marriage relationship. And we were talking about different things. Finance came up. And she said, "He doesn't control the finances. I control the finances." The checkbook, she meant. And that's fine. Whoever you want to do that, that doesn't have to be done by one or the other. But she followed that statement by saying, "Reason he doesn't handle the checkbook is because he couldn't balance the checkbook if his life depended on it." And I'm thinking, now tell me how the man felt. Now, I don't care if it's true or not. That's beside the point. I don't care what he was challenged at mathematically or understanding the accounting process or what. It doesn't make any difference. He felt absolutely disrespected. And as they were talking about that and the things that they needed to do, her next statement was, "He needs to get a second job." And I would tell you, that is some of the worst words that a man can ever hear. Now, here's the problem. With the job he had, they couldn't meet the bills they had. I would have agreed with him that way, absolutely. But she said he needs to get a second job. She thinks she's just stating fact. Somebody who's one of the men, tell me, how do you hear that comment? What do you perceive? "You're not doing enough. You're not taking care of us. You're not providing for us. If you were providing for us, you wouldn't need a second job." All of that's going through his mind. The same way as a husband, very seldom would a husband ever look at his wife and say, "I really don't love you," but he may say some things that are absolutely unloving to her. You know, that she perceives as unloving. He perceives things as being either respectful or disrespectful. You need to appreciate his desire to analyze and to counsel. Men approach conversation differently than women. We talked about that. So a wife says, "Honey, we need to talk." That's not what the man hears. Here's what the man hears. "Houston, we have a problem." Because he's thinking, why would you want to talk or put forth a scenario if you didn't want me to help you fix it? Don't we do that? And I learned this lesson the hard way, I can tell you. When we had three toddlers all at home at the same time, I would come home, and I should have picked up on the clues right away, you know, when the identity of the children are my children, not our children, when you walk through the door. "You know what your son did today?" And so she would proceed to tell me what either one or two or all three of them had chosen to do that day. And so what do you think my response was? I would say, "You know what, here's what you should have said. Here's what you should have done." I thought that's exactly what she was looking for the first time. Never again do you think that's exactly what she's looking for, but you understand. But that's a man's desire. We're thinking, why are you bringing it up if you're not looking for a solution? Because I wouldn't bring it up if I wasn't looking for a solution. I don't bring things up just to vent them, or just to have the conversation, or just because I need to connect with an adult instead of three toddlers that I've been with for 8 hours. I'm not thinking in those terms. But she was. She was thinking in different terms. She just wanted to connect. The proper response to, here's what your son did today, is either I'm sorry or uh-huh. That's about the only two things that are going to work. She wants to be able to just talk, but I wanted to fix. But I would tell wives this. If you understand that that's the way your husband approaches life, there's no reason for address. You're going to have to let him fix things sometimes. You're going to have to appreciate that he wants to analyze. That's how you show him respect. When you're going to him and you say something and you allow him to put forth ideas. And as hard as it is, and you may just want to vent that one time, maybe sometimes you have to say, you know what, I appreciate that. Next time, that's what I'll try. And then you may have a conversation later where you can vent, but you're appreciating and showing him that you are just willing to allow him to play his role. Because he doesn't know what else to do in a situation like that. He's wired by God to be the provider, protector, leader. And so he thinks in that role, what his role is to help fix whatever problems are there. And that's when he feels the most useful. So you've got to let him have that tie to his ability to work and to achieve and to protect and provide and to lead and to analyze and counsel. How do I express that to him? There are different things you can do. Talking to your husband about his chosen field. How much you appreciate the work that he puts in. Men need to hear that. At work, it means a lot to a guy when the boss just comes up and puts his arm on your shoulder or says something to you and says, hey, job well done. Appreciate that job. I'm telling you, a guy walks away holding his head high. Do you not, men? But if your boss never says anything to you, never compliments you, never, you don't have a good relationship with him, do you? You feel badly about your job. But all he has to do is say, hey, you know what? Man, that project you took care of, that particular thing you did, perfect. Exactly what we was looking for. The man feels good about that. Women need to learn. Men aren't looking for love. He doesn't want to be told how much you love him. He wants to be told how much you appreciate and respect him for who he is and what he's doing. So maybe you just praise his commitment. You tell him, you know what? I know you've been putting in some extra hours, but you don't know how much I appreciate that, because it scares me in this job market that so many people are losing their jobs. And I know that you're putting in those extra hours to make sure that we're protected and you don't lose your job. And then he understands that you're complimenting him on that. The things that you show by way of body language, the words that you use, all of that, just leaning on him. Men want to be, they just want to be leaned on sometimes as far as the decisions that they make, the things that they do, and to express to him, you know what, really glad that you did that for our family. Sometimes you may have to just tell him up front, hey, you know what, not looking for a solution this time, I just need your ear for a minute. Let him know that. Men will be at ease if that's the case, because we don't understand what you want. We don't understand why you ask questions instead of make statements. Men make statements if they got something to say. Typically, they don't ask questions. You know, your wife says, is that your dirty sock on the floor? I'm thinking, seriously? I mean, if it's not my sock, we got more to talk about than laundry. I'm thinking, if you want me to pick my sock up and put it in the hamper, say, pick your sock up and put it in the hamper. I understand that. We deal simply. I know that's difficult. The woman's asking that question. Tell him ahead of time. I just want to put you at ease. I'm not asking for any solution on this at all. I know this is not a problem that you can just solve. I just want to have your ear for a minute and let you know what kind of day I had. It just helps. The man feels like, now I don't have to worry about failure. I have to tell you, that's one of the men's biggest concerns when he's presented with a problem, is am I going to have the answer for it? That's difficult. In preaching, I can tell you, there was no greater lesson I learned sometime into my preaching role than to say, I don't have any idea. I don't know. Once I felt comfortable that I could at least say that, it became less scary that you'd be presented with a question in class that you didn't know the answer for. Because you start thinking in terms of failure, what am I going to do and how am I going to respond? Sometimes that's okay. Let him know that it's okay not to have an answer. You just want to have his ear for a minute. You know, letting him fix. Secondly, not only the expression of confidence, he wants to know if it's going to be a life of admiration. Is it going to be filled with admiration? Men look for compliments too. Not typically about the same thing. Judy will tell me when we're getting ready to go somewhere, and you know, as a man, you think, I need to be taking a clue from that. Because I may get dressed and get ready to go somewhere, and she says, wow, you really look nice today. I have to tell you, very seldom is that my concern. At all. I'm not saying I want to look like a slob or anything, but I'm just saying I'm okay with the way I look when I go out. And so when she pays me that compliment, really, as a husband, I should have learned by now to say, oh, well, you look absolutely stunning. Or actually, I should have said that before she said anything to me, and I'd even get more points for that. But, you know, recognizing that men are looking for compliments, but it's not typically on the way we look. We want to be complimented about who we are, what we're doing, things of that nature. And women need to understand the things that you say can go one way or the other. You know, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones, but harsh words pierce like a sword. Trying to get that wife to understand, she made two comments at the table that cut that guy to the quick that was going to take months of healing in that relationship, and she didn't realize that. Just a single word spoken. It wasn't about the way he looked. She may have thought he looked wonderful, but I can tell you, she could tell him, you're the most gorgeous man I've ever met in my life. You don't take care of our family. Which do you think he's going to remember? Now, his identity is tied to who he is, not so much the way he looks. So think about that. Proverbs 18, verse 21 says, the tongue has the power over life and of death. And we understand that, don't we? You go to the doctor, and the doctor comes out and he can give you one of two words. What if the doctor says malignant? It can change your whole thought process, can it not? Or he says benign. Two words that can totally change the way you think. Wouldn't you agree with that? That's the nature of words. We have to be so careful with just the little things. And sometimes wives don't demonstrate that kind of respect to their husbands. They'll say something about them to their friends. They demean them in some fashion, not meaning to, but just make comments that are cutting. And we need to make sure we understand I'm demonstrating respect. When a woman compliments a husband on who he is, when she flirts with him, because men love flirtation. They love to be flirted with. They love to be seduced in that way, like I'm very desirous of you and I've got that flirtatious attitude. They love that. Whenever she flirts with him, if you think of that box situation again, it doesn't matter what box he's in. Whatever box he's in ignites with enthusiasm. Because he just feels that she is desirous of me as well, for who I am, for what I am. And if you think that's not true, let me ask you to explain one phrase. You're the man. I'm telling you, a group of guys can get together and one of them can hit the other one on the back and say, hey, you're the man. And he says, no, you're the man. And they had that debate going back and forth. But I'll tell you, whoever is declared the man when they leave the room holds his head high and his shoulders back because he has been declared the man from his friends. How nonsensical is that phrase? And yet, why would it have that kind of effect? Because it is an acknowledgement by his peers that he is the one that they look up to. I'm telling you, that's what husbands need to feel from their wives. They need to have that kind of admiration, that I admire you for what you do, for who you are, for the work you put forth, for the care and the concern that you have, and I want to demonstrate that respect to you. Doesn't always go men exactly the way that you want. You know, after a particular Sunday sermon, we'll leave the preacher nameless. Walking out the back of the building, and one of the ladies in the building as he's leaving says, I got to tell you, I think you are just a fabulous preacher. Maybe one of the great preachers in the country today. So, you know, you got to figure this guy's feeling pretty good. He's feeling pretty big. And on the car, or in the car on the way home, he's just kind of sitting over there, got kind of a smile on his face and feeling pretty good about himself. And his wife says, what are you thinking about? And this is not the nothing time, because he had thoughts in mind. And he says, And he explains the situation to him, what happened. And he said, I was just wondering in my own mind, I wonder how many great preachers there are in this country right now. She said, one less than you think, I assure you. You can burst a bubble pretty quickly. You can burst a, be careful. Demonstrate the respect. Let me ask you this, wives. How many of you send cards to your husband or give cards to your husbands for different occasions? Let me see a show of hands. How do you normally sign the card if you're willing to share that? Don't tell me all the gooey stuff you write in it. Just how do you sign it normally? How do you sign a card?
Love you.
I love.
Or love.
Love or I love you. Anybody else? Things similar to that? I've had some women say, with all my love, things of that nature. How many of you have ever given your husband a card and said, with all my respect, and put your name on it? Why would you not do that, women? Explain to me why you wouldn't do that typically. It's not how you think. And so, with all my respect, sounds like it's missing what?
Love.
Sounds like it's missing love.
It sounds like a business transaction. I respect you. It sounds like you say in business respectfully, you're...
All right. And so, why is it that a husband is looking more for respect than the love? And I think that's a great analogy, that it sounds like a business transaction. Why is it that that's where he feels the best? When he is at work, I'm saying when he's getting the compliments at work, when he's got somebody that praises him for the work that he does, it is the respect that he's looking for. And I'm not telling you sign all your cards that way. Although, it wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt for a wife to say, with all my respect, and this is why. And maybe you list three or four things about your husband and say, this is why I respect you for who you are, for what you do. I'm telling you, it will make him feel. It's not that he doesn't want your love and the card that expresses your love. But I would tell you, most husbands know they have your love. Most women are very loving in their nature and the way they approach things because that is their own need. He wants to know that you respect him. Think about ways you can demonstrate that to him. Write him notes about the things you appreciate and respect about him as opposed to just why you love him. Tell him why he is the man of your life and express that to him. And then finally, it doesn't get much simpler than this. Is life with you going to be sexual? That is the way God made us. I had one woman who said, she was talking to me afterwards and she said, it's almost like men are animals. It's like they're dogs. That's all they think about. And I said, let me just ask you this. Whatever drive I have for the sexual side of our relationship and marriage, who gave it to me? How can it possibly be bad if it is a God-given drive? Now, there can be improper fulfillment of it. We know that. With somebody that is not my wife, whether I'm married or not, with somebody that's not my wife makes it an improper fulfillment of it. But God created me with the drives and the needs that I have. For whatever reason he did that, it's not only for procreation. When you read in the scriptures and you read things like, as a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. I didn't make myself visual. God made me visual. Why is it that wives need to try to look a certain way? Because God created their husbands as visual beings. I didn't do that. He didn't do that. God made us that way, gave us that drive. And so he wants us to understand that's a part of the relationship, so much so that it becomes a microcosm of the relationship. Is sex the man's greatest need in a marriage? No. It is indicative of his greatest need. The same as conversation was not the woman's greatest need. It's indicative of her greatest need, which is love. Sex is indicative of the man's greatest need, which is respect. Men feel disrespected when this part of the marriage relationship is not what he feels that it should be. Women don't think in that terms. She's not trying to be disrespectful. She's not even trying to be unloving. She doesn't understand that it is a basic fundamental need. The same as if I don't understand that I need to hold my wife, if I don't understand that I need to say things to her and that I need to tell her I love her, because those aren't things I need. So can I just act like I don't need to do that for her either? No, that's wrong. That's her need. I need to fulfill it. Because God gives me the right to do so. The privilege of doing so. I would tell you that women need to understand how men view this subject in the relationship. It's his need. It's your privilege. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 3 says, it isn't your body when you get married. It is his body. That's the nature of the law of possession in a marriage. It is there for your husband. Now, should husbands be loving and treat that in the right way? Yes, they should. Please don't misunderstand me. But I'm saying a wife needs to understand a man is going to tie much of the relationship. So when men and women come to you for counseling, Christian men and women, come to you for counseling and you're going to study with a marriage, overwhelmingly does the man bring that subject up, not the woman. Now, I'm not saying it never happens the other way around. It does sometimes. Overwhelmingly, she will bring up emotional needs that are not being fulfilled. Rarely do I have a wife sitting across the table from me saying, my husband is just not physically sexual enough. He's not intimate enough. I want to be intimate with him, and he's not. But she will say, he never tells me he loves me. He never opens a door for me. He never thinks of me first. He always thinks of himself first. You know, she'll talk about those kind of things because she is being emotionally unfulfilled. He will talk about the physical side of the marriage because it is every bit as much a basic need to him as the emotional side of fulfillment is to her. We know we view that differently. We know that. And that's okay. God made us. But my job as a husband is to fulfill my wife's needs. Her job as a wife is to fulfill my needs. That's the nature and the privilege God has given us in that relationship. Think about how differently we react. You're going up and getting ready to go somewhere. The wife steps out of the shower as you walk into the room. She steps out of the shower, and I'm telling you, most men are thinking, wow, you know, we've got 20 minutes. Maybe this is an opportune time to have some intimacy. And I'm just saying, why? Because we're visually stimulated. God made us that way. He's the one that said, let her body satisfy you visually. Let her breast satisfy you. Those are God's words, not mine. You just reverse the scenario. The wife walks in, the husband's stepping out of the shower, and she's thinking, be careful, I just waxed the floor. You know, or please stand on the mat, I don't want to clean up a mess. It isn't that she doesn't love him, it isn't that she doesn't appreciate him. I'm saying we think differently, we're not stimulated the same way. It is why men like to see their women dressed certain ways, why they need to look certain ways, because men are very visually stimulated, and they want their wife to have that appeal to them, and it does make a difference. I would tell you, every man understands the connotation of these words from the Scriptures. And David saw a woman bathing. Do you not, men? Do you not understand the connotation that automatically goes with that? David saw a naked woman, is basically what it's saying, isn't it? Now, misused the opportunity. He should have turned his back. Let's give David absolute credit as if he didn't have any idea Bathsheba would be on that roof or anything else. I mean, I've heard people talk about David should have never been looking. Well, there's nothing in that passage to tell us that David was looking for a naked woman. But once he saw her, then he should have turned away and walked away, shouldn't he? Should have walked away from her. He didn't. He continued to gaze upon her. But every man understands the connotation of just saying he saw a woman that was naked. He saw her and he was up there. We pride ourselves in being logical. We don't have any real explanation for why the testosterone works the way it does. We would like to be able to say, you know what, this is just not an issue. I'll just put this under control. But it is a God-given drive, and women need to understand that that's a part of the relationship. And you can count on it. As goes the physical side of a relationship, so will go the relationship in most cases. That's why it is one of the top three sources of conflict every single poll that is taken. Remember we talked about those? Finances, kids, and sex. Not always in that order. But those three are always at the top three positions in virtually every single survey or poll that is taken. It is big. You need to understand that just as he's needing to minister to your spirit to have access to your body, you need to minister to his body to have access to his spirit. Men are emotionally tied that way, and we understand that. One man said, you got to kick the devil out of bed. It's kind of interesting. Here's the way I think Satan works. prior to getting married, he'll do everything he can to get a couple into an intimate relationship together and into bed together. I believe that. Satan will try every tool he's got to get a couple to sleep together before they get married. But I think he'll do everything he can to get them out of bed once they're married. He'll do everything he can to disrupt the relationship from its proper fulfillment, because if he can disrupt a proper fulfillment, then he gets another opportunity to get it fulfilled in an improper way. It makes a difference. Make sure that we understand that. And then secondly, don't neglect him. Don't neglect. It's your privilege to serve that need. There is no greater symbol of respect to the husband so that she can submit to her husband and show him that the physical needs that he has make a difference. Men will get fulfillment of the physical need. All wives need to understand that. Men will get fulfillment of the physical drive that God has given them. Some ways are proper, some ways are not proper, but men will end up getting fulfillment. It becomes important that we fulfill that in the way that God would have us to fulfill it. Let me give you a couple of quotes in closing, because this is the thing that sometimes I think that the wives may not understand about this relationship. It isn't that just the man wants the physical relationship, though I would tell you that changes his way of thinking. It re-energizes him. That's a part of the relationship as God has given him for a way to get those strengths back. But here's some things that some men have said. Most women don't think about, what is my husband thinking when that part of the relationship? Here's what one man said. Wish that my wife understood that making a priority of meeting my intimacy needs is the loudest and clearest way that she can say, you are more important to me than anything else in the world. Love that quote from that man. He's just saying, I just don't feel I mean as much to her as she says I mean to her if she's not willing to think of me in those kind of terms. He goes on to say, it's a form of communication that speaks more forcefully and with less room for misinterpretation than any other. That's true. That's a part of the relationship. He is seeking fulfillment. Why? Because God gave him that drive. It is so important, I think, to remember that is all God-given. And there's nothing in the least impure about the physical, intimate relationship within a marriage. God tells us, let the marriage bed be undefiled. It's a good thing. It just needs to be the way that God has described it within the marriage relationship. He wants to be desired. And I would tell you, he doesn't feel desired. If her approach is, have eyes only for me, because that's the way the women feel. I only want you noticing me. I only want you having eyes for me. That's fair. That's absolutely fair in a relationship. It should be have eyes only for me. But she doesn't understand how difficult that can be if she's saying, have eyes only for me, but then unwilling to submit to him sexually. One man says, she doesn't understand how even her occasional dismissals make me feel less desirable. I can't resist her. I wish that I too were irresistible. She says that I am, but her ability to say no so easily makes it hard to believe. That's another quote that I think is a good representation of. The man has the battling thought. She says, I love you. I love you with all my heart. But she doesn't think in terms of that this is a serious need, a part of his life, a part of every day. You need to think in terms of men have needs that are physical, where women have needs that are emotional. And God created both of us that way. And men feel disrespected when they are not fulfilled physically. They wonder why. Why doesn't she want to be with me? Does she not enjoy the intimacy the way I enjoy the intimacy? I want you to imagine this. As one lady was describing, she had called her mother, and she said, we're not coming over today. They were supposed to go over, her and her husband were supposed to go over to the house. And she said, we're not coming over today. Her mother said, I'm sorry, why? And she said, we had a spat. And the mother said, I'm sorry that you're having an argument. You know, can you tell me what it's about? And she goes, well, Bill, he's all upset. He wanted to be intimate this morning, and I just told him, no, we just can't do it this morning. We've got too much to do. And her mother asked her, said, how long has it been since you've been intimate with your husband? She said, it's been just about 3 weeks. Her mother, you know, and I'm telling you, nobody wants to have this conversation, I know, with their mother, you know, or father for that matter, but her mother said, shame on you. And the daughter wasn't expecting that. But Ramona says, shame on you. Do you not understand how much a part of his life that is? And so she's telling her daughter, you should have been more responsive. Women need to learn, respond more often. Men need to be loving and considerate. I understand that. But you need to respond more often. You need to initiate sex. You need to be flirtatious sometimes and seductive in the way that you approach things so that he feels highly desirable. And then finally, never ever, you want to make a man feel disrespected. Never ever use the intimate relationship as a bargaining tool. That gets done more times than you might want to imagine. The amount of husbands who say, my wife says, we can be intimate if you do this or if we do this or whatever, never use it as a bargaining. Even if he gets the sexual side of the relationship, if it's used as a bargaining tool, he will still feel disrespected. I'm only getting this because of what I'm providing. Just remember the golden rule, it works in the sexual relationship as well. Treat that other person the way you would want to be treated if you were in their same situation. And that's a part of life for men. He wants to be admired. He wants to have that confident expression of yours in who he is and what he does. And he's going to be sexual because that's the way God's made him. Much simpler on the man's end, but still, it's the needs that God has given. How do I show respect to a husband? By fulfilling his needs. That's what we need to do. Thank you so much for your time this morning. I think we'll probably close out with a prayer or announcements and then meet back at about 1.
Okay,